Today's Teisho will be on case 60 in the Heikigan Roku, the Bien Lu. Case 60 is entitled Umon's Staff Becoming a Dragon. Engo's introduction: Buddhas and sentient beings are not, by nature, different. Mountains, rivers, and your own self are all just the same. Why should they be separate and constitute two worlds? Even if you are well versed in Zen koans and know how to deal with them, if you stop there, everything is spoiled. If you do not stop, the whole world will be dissolved with not a particle of it left behind. Now tell me, what does it mean to be well versed in Zen koans? See the following. Main subject. Umon, Yunmen, held out his staff and said to the assembled monks, "The staff has transformed itself into a dragon and swallowed up the universe. Where are the mountains, the rivers, and the great world?" Secho's verse. "The staff has swallowed up the universe. Don't say peach blossoms float on the water. The fish that gets its tail singed may fail to grasp the mist and clouds. The ones that lie with gills exposed need not lose heart." My verse is done, but do you really hear me? Only be carefree, stand unwavering. Why so bewildered? 72 blows are not enough. I want to give you 150. So, thank you all for sitting so well, so beautifully this morning. It's really inspiring. Everybody is working very hard. And I'm very grateful to you for your efforts. Really, people on that side of the room sit very deeply and inspire people on this side of the room, and people on that side look over here, and this is one of the beautiful things about practicing together. It's just, whether you're online or whether you're here in person. You know, I was just reading something, people are really more isolated than ever, isn't that? I just, before Sesshin, I came and I read this article, and it said that people's isolation is actually growing. Here in the United States, lots of people feel very isolated, right? And they said that COVID has only made it worse. A lot of people have very few social contacts. They go to work and they come home and they surf the web, right? And they said that men who watch TV in America, they watch on average, I couldn't believe the figure, but they said 7 hours a day. It's like, oh my God, you know? You get up and you go to work and you come home and you just start watching TV until you go to sleep. That's so sad, right? And it's very unhealthy for everybody. You know, it's wonderful when people have something like this, like Zen, and a Sangha, you know, community of practice, right? And, you know, when you come to a sit or you come to Sesshin, you meet people you would never have otherwise met, right? You know, if you're in business, you might meet, you know, who knows, a physicist or a psychologist, right? You know, you meet all kinds of people. One of my best friends is a lifelong friend, when I started practicing Zen with Genki Roshi, my Shifu. You know, one of the people in our group was, I remember going to a Sesshin. And it was one of my first sesshins, and during the break period, we would go out in the back of the building, and there was platform, elevated porch, and you could look out below at the woods. And every time we had a chance to stretch our legs, I would go out there, and I would always see this man smoking cigarettes, right? Looking very guilty. And after Sashina, I drove home to Seattle with him, and it turns out he was a neuroanatomist at the, you know, working for the medical school. I had no idea. We became, you know, friends. We've been friends all our lives, right? So, you know, that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't gotten out of my apartment, you know? And when you practice like this, you meet people you never would otherwise meet. And you might even meet people you don't have a lot in common with in some ways. But, you know, when we sit together like this for 5 days or 2 days or 7 days, you know, you form these amazing bonds, right? It's like you form these deep connections, right? And, you know, I had friends in the Zen Center where I trained in Seattle. They've been my friends for almost 50 years. And, you know, for the longest time, you know, I saw them at the Zen Center and at Sesshin, and we would have coffee and maybe go out to eat sometimes. And I didn't even know what they did for a living, right? It was just, you know, if somebody had said, is so-and-so married or not? I wouldn't have known, right? Does so-and-so have children? I don't know. But I felt so connected. And I don't think that connection is an illusion. I think we really are connected on this deeper level, right? And, you know, we think we're disconnected, but we're connected on a deeper level, right? And you know, when we come together like this for Sesshin, we don't know, in a way, you know, we come here looking for something, enlightenment or inspiration or liberation. And, you know, while we're looking for other things, we're all together connected on this deep level. If you continue to practice, you'll see this yourself. You know, you have your Zen friends, right? And it's a deep relationship. You know, it's deeper than agreeing or disagreeing. It's deeper, you know, it's on a level that's deeper than even knowing and not knowing, right? And when we practice together, you know, there's a kind of intimacy, right? Intimacy, that emerges because we're taking down all our barriers, you know? And that's so powerful and wonderful and liberating, you know? In some ways, it's the secret of Sesshin, really, right? So anyway, you're all doing a wonderful job sitting together and inspiring each other and, you know, discovering your underground connection, right? Underground connection. So this is a koan that features Master Umon, who's this great, truly wonderful Zen master. And many of his sayings, or his koans, many of his sayings appear as koans in the koan collections. I really admire him greatly. He held out a staff and he said to the assembled monks, "This staff has transformed itself into a dragon and swallowed up the universe." See, so you know, it was traditional in China at a certain period for sometimes for like a master to have a staff, right? That was a conventional symbol of the office, right? Of the leader of the community, right? And he walks into the Zendo and he shows this staff and he says, my staff has turned into a dragon and swallowed up the universe. And, you know, if you are given this as a koan, you know, you're bound to feel confused and uncertain about what to do, right? And it may take some time. I don't want to give too much away, but you know, a lot of people are living false lives. And because they're living false lives, I think it creates a lot of suffering, right? Suffering. My father was a military person. He served in the Navy in the Pacific Theater. And when he came back to the United States after the war, he was in the military for a while. And then he worked for the Defense Department in the Navy, the Office of the Navy, you know. And my father had been, you know, through the war, very difficult experiences. And when I was growing up, I was one of these kids who didn't like football, you know, and I was very interested in, like, I loved to read, and I was really interested in, like, plays, you know. TV was a new technology, and I used to watch TV, and I was fascinated by TV shows, you know. They were fascinating to me, and exciting, you know. We were living in Baltimore, Maryland, and at that time, Baltimore was like a really tough place, really difficult place to grow up, you know. I used to worry when I went to school that somebody would beat me up, right? And so I would worry about getting beaten up on the way to school and worry about getting beaten up on the way home. And you know, when I would turn on the TV, it was like magic world, right? And you know, these beautiful places and interesting people, so unlike my world. And I began to get really interested in, like, puppets, right? Puppets. So you know, I don't know if you have ever seen marionettes, but they're lifelike puppets, and they're held by strings. And a master puppeteer can make them look like they're walking across the room, right? Or speaking and so on. And there was a puppet show on television, and I loved it, you know. And I went to, I wanted to buy a puppet. I went to a couple toy stores in Baltimore, and nobody had any marionettes, right? They had, like, hand puppets. But I wanted to have a marionette, and you know, I couldn't get one. And so finally I bought a doll, right? Like a boy doll. And I brought it home, and I was going to put on a play. And I was thinking about how the play, you know, what the story would be, and I had this doll. And my father came home and discovered that I had this doll, and he was so worried about me, right? He was so worried that I was, I think he must have worried that I was gay. But he was also just worried that, you know, I was going in a wrong direction. So, you know, basically, for Christmas, my father gave me a football outfit, you know, and we used to go throw the football together. He bought me, fairly expensive, a helmet and shoulder pads, and I didn't belong to a football team, but I think he was trying to get me to put my doll away and and you know, basically become the kind of person he thought I should be. See, and when he made an issue about the doll, you know, he said only little girls play with dolls. I was so ashamed of myself, you know. I felt so wrong, right? And I put on the football suit and I would go outside and try to find people who would throw footballs with me. But I quickly gave it up because when I was a kid, I was really poorly coordinated, right? So I just couldn't do that kind of athletics. My brother, on the other hand, he wanted to be the son my father wanted him to be. So my brother, when he was in junior high school, guess what he did? He went out for the football team. You know, and my brother played a junior high and high school football. It's clear to me years later, my brother wanted my father to approve of him, you know, and love him, right? And he didn't want to be an outsider like me. You know, I think all of us have experiences. The reason I'm talking about all of this is I think all of us have experiences like this where, you know, as we're growing up, we want to be loved and we want to be happy. And, you know, we decide that the way to be loved or to be happy is to be what other people want us to be, right? So we start playing the roles that our parents or other people who care about us want us to play. And we work so hard to fill those roles, to be that person, you know. My brother was a rather small person for football, and he often got hurt. You know, he'd come home after playing and he'd have like these injuries, or he'd be some big guy would have hit him on the football field and really knocked him down, you know. And he'd come home and he'd have sore muscles or bruises, right? You know, and with me, I wasn't an athlete, but I realized that I could be loved by my parents if I became like a really good student. I was good at school. So I worked really hard to be a great student at school, you know. I used to just, all I wanted was to get really good grades. I didn't care about what I was learning. I just wanted to get really good grades. And, you know, when you look back on the events of your life, you could ask yourself, why did I do that? You know, why did my brother play football? Why did I do that? You know, why did I try to become the best scholar in my high school? And it would be nice if I could say my love of knowledge or my love of science or my love of literature. But actually, that wasn't what I was doing. I was trying to be a person others wanted me to be. Right, and I think this process goes on and on throughout our lives. You know, we're always looking to others for our models, and everybody does that. That's true. You know, I have people I admire and have patterned my behavior on that, but. You have to be careful because what happens is you wind up living a life one day you're the person your mother or father wanted you to be, and you suddenly realize that you are unhappy and you don't know why, right? And I think this is very common, right? And so, you know, sometimes what we do is when we're unhappy with who we are, we, you know, find somebody else who will help us to think better about ourselves, right? So, you know, if you're, you know, if you're unhappy in your work, you know, you might, you know, go to the gym and try to build up big muscles, right? Because, you know, there's somebody you admire who has big muscles. And it's like we're chasing happiness in our lives, and we're not going to find it, actually, this way, even though this is commonly what we do, right? You know, I'm an English teacher, English professor, and you know, I got into the business of being an English professor sort of by accident. You know, actually, when I went to when I applied to graduate school, I wanted to be an anthropologist, but I couldn't get any financial support as an anthropologist. So the English department gave me financial support, so I became an English professor, right? And you know, when I got into my job, wanted to be like these people that everybody admired, you know. So I read their writings, and I tried to write like them. And, you know, at some point I realized, you know, I'm never going to be, you know, this person. So who am I really? You know, who am I really? Right? And, you know, so, you know, one of the consequences of living like a false life, of chasing happiness by being the person others want us to be, is that we never get in touch with the core of who we really are, right? You know, we're always playing a part or playing a role, and it when it doesn't feel authentic or it doesn't feel real to us, we feel sad, right? You know. I think this is how people go through their lives. People often feel like they're missing something or they're incomplete. And they try to solve that problem by looking for people they can imitate, right? And if we just become that person, I'll be happy or I'll be fulfilled. So it's like chasing all the time something that we can't attain, right? And I think this is very common in the world, right? You know, in China, if you wanted your family to be wealthy and happy, you became an imperial scholar. You took the imperial examination, and if you got in, you would become like a mandarin. You would become part of the government's administrative structure. And, you know, families would spend huge amounts of money to put one of their children inside the imperial administrative structure. And, you know, you would spend lots of money trying to get your son to pass this exam, right? And you know, so it's not just our world, it's many worlds. And, you know, a lot of Zen masters, actually, in China, were people who had failed their imperial exams, right? And when they failed their exam, you know, they had disappointed everybody. And then they had to say to themselves, well, you know, who am I? Where do I come from? And where am I going, right? Those are the most important questions, right? When people begin to ask that question, they begin to practice Zen, right? They begin to practice Zen. And, you know, even Zen can be sort of like this. You know, when I started reading books about Zen, I thought I could become a, quote, Zen master, you know, like an enlightened person. And I wanted to be a person called a Zen master so that everybody would love me, you know, and admire me, right? And all of my Zen training has been to liberate me from that fantasy, right? I had gone to meditation class at the University of Washington, but my Shifu, Genki Roshi, my Roshi, wasn't there. And I went to the Zen Center, the Seattle Zen Center, and I came into the building and there was a small Japanese man, not in robes. He had his, there's a, like monastic work clothes he had on. And he was mopping the floor and I said, I'm looking for Genki Roshi, I'm looking for the Roshi. And he was mopping the floor and he looked up and he said, oh, I'm the Roshi. And you're the Roshi and you're mopping the floor, right? I mean, I became his student and he was probably one of the most natural people I have ever met, you know? He was one of the most, I never saw Genki Roshi get angry or upset or worried about making a mistake. You know, a lot of us, when we think we're doing something wrong, we panic. You know, we feel like we're not where we are supposed to be or not who we're supposed to be. And it's like real panic. It's like I'm not who other people want me to be. I'm not going to succeed at this, you know? And Genki Roshi seemed so relaxed and calm. He was so kind, and I think it came from his deep experience of our fundamental nature, right? Fundamental nature. You know, when we're chasing after fulfillment, as other people have defined it, we're actually getting farther and farther from the happiness we seek, right? You know, it's like the more work we put into being loved or being admired, you know, the more and more insecure we become, I think. You know, so if you say, okay, well, how am I supposed to live if I'm not trying to please others, if I'm not trying to be something others will admire? You know, we're always acting from like this deficit model. It's like I'm always a deficient person. I'm not a good boy. I'm not a good man. I'm not a good woman. I'm not a good mother, right? And we're always panicked, right? Because we're not being those things. And people go through their whole lives like that. You know, most of us, you know, have not encountered the dragon, right? Most of us have not encountered Yunmen's dragon. You know, sometimes if you think about it, you know, sometimes in life decide you want to do something that will make you happy. Let's say you go on an expensive vacation. And you go on the vacation and you come home and you can't even remember the vacation, right? And then there are these moments like when, you know, that you remember all your life, right? Maybe you just got on a bicycle and you went, you know, you wanted to see if you could ride 50 miles along the Delaware River and you rode 50 miles along, and you'll never forget it, right? It's like, you know, why is that remembered, and why was that expensive trip to, you know, Cancun, why did that have no meaning? You know, it's like a lot of Zen practice is learning how to let go and be present without judgment, right? Be present without judgment. You know, a lot of the moments when we're really happy in life, we're not trying to accomplish anything or be anyone special. You know, we actually forget all about that. And, you know, we're trusting the unfolding of our life. We're just trusting the process, you know, moment after moment. You know, our life is unfolding. And, you know, if you want your life to go in a certain direction, right, you're always going to be frustrated and tense. And if you if you become one with the unfolding of things as they unfold, right, you have a completely different experience of life. You know, suddenly everything seems connected. Everything seems alive, right? As long as we're living like a false life, you know, nothing seems alive. And, you know, we can go to the store and we can buy things, we can get a new car, we can, you know, but none of those things are going to solve the problem, see? I think Yunmen is, you know, it's like when you are at a Zen Sesshin, if you come to the Sesshin and you say, at this Sesshin I am going to achieve Dai Kensho, I am going to achieve great enlightenment, you're not, you know, guaranteed not to work out, right? And you'll have a miserable time. You know, if you come to Sesshin and you say, something in me wanted to do this. I don't know what it is. You know, I don't, I'm not going to make any money from coming to Sesshin. I'm not going to be able to put it on my resume. But something is telling me to do this. I don't know what it is, but when I do it, I feel better. I feel more alive, right? See, I think it's always important for people to practice Zazen so that they can hear that, they can feel that energy or hear that voice, right? You know, when I started doing meditation at the Seattle Zen Center, I was very stressed out all the time, you know. And one day I went to see my graduate director, and I had just come from a Zazen at the Zen Center. And he said, what is that? I had my Zafu under my arm. And he said, what is that? And I said, oh, this is a Zen pillow. I said, I tried to make a joke. And he said, you are wasting your time. He said, you should be, you know, you should be working on your dissertation. You shouldn't be meditating. And I went home and I thought, gosh, maybe he's right. You know, maybe I'm wasting my life by doing this. I should be working on my dissertation, you know. And at that time, I used to go to the Zen Center in the morning. We would arrive at 4:30 in the morning, and my shifu would be there in the Chan Hall, and other people would be there, and I would sit down on my cushion, and the first thought that would happen to me is I would think, oh my God, I shouldn't be here. I should be working on my dissertation. Right. But then I would think, well, you know, I don't have a ride back to my house right now. I have to wait till the sit is over. And I would start watching my breath. And as I watched my breath and my mind became empty, I felt so much better. I felt so much better. And about 40 minutes into the meditation, all of those things I was so worried about now seem very small and unimportant. You know, and at the end of an hour and 20 minutes of meditation, I felt so free, so free, you know. And then we would have breakfast. We would have a rice gruel and some stir-fried vegetables and a skimono pickle, you know. And then I would go, John Sunston, we would all jump into his Volkswagen bus and drive back to the university and our jobs. You know, if somebody asked me, why are you doing Zen? I would not have known what to say. Yeah, I would not have known. But in my kokoro, I felt so alive. See, I felt so alive. And if somebody said, why? I don't know. But so alive. See, and you know, we really don't understand ourselves very well. You know, when we are unhappy, we look for somebody who's happy and we try to do what they're doing. And that makes sense, it's logical, right? And that's okay, you know, give it a try, maybe it'll work out. But on a deeper level, you know, on a deeper level, to follow the way of Zen, the way of Chan, is to live in this not knowing. And not knowing is how we connect with the universe, right? The great universe. You know, we only imagine that we're cut off from the great universe because of our expectations. And when we leave behind our expectations, we are restored to that fundamental unity. You know, at the temple where second Roshi, trained at a temple in Japan called Myoshinji, which is a big Rinzai temple. And he said, in the morning, the monks would all wash their faces in these basins, sinks. And they didn't have any hot water. You know, Myoshinji is like 500 years old. There's no central heating. It's very cold. You know, they would have water that in buckets, and he said you broke the ice on the top of the, you know, water so you could wash your face. And he said these monks would, you know, they'd wash their face with ice cold water. And he said, but, you know, when you look down at the basin, there were four characters. Basically, I only know feet, the character for feet. I only know feet. In other words, I am always here, where I am always 100%. I'm always connected. I'm always one with the universe, see? I just forget, and I forget because I'm pursuing a self that is really just what other people want me to be, and not my true nature. See. So you know, Yunmen is saying to his students, you could say, you know, are you feeling? You know, are you just going through the motions of your life, you know, or have you met the true dragon? See, have you met the true dragon? And, you know, sometimes outside of Sesshin, we meet the true dragon, you know. All of a sudden, you're not trying to do anything. You know, you're riding your bicycle, and you know, you're no longer even Kurt or Susan. You know, the moment is just 100%, you know. And you may remember moments like that for the rest of your life because you're really, the dragon has awakened, see. And then, you know, you may have other events in your life, awards, you know, it's always nice to get a raise, but you know, and it doesn't matter. The dragon has not awakened. You know, we Zen people, this is all about awakening the dragon, discovering the dragon, right? And, you know, when we discover the dragon, we stop living to please others. You know, we discover that, you know, we have always been 100%, you know, 100%, you know, no deficit, no deficit. Buddhas and sentient beings are not by nature different. See, that seems so hard to believe, right? You know, hard to believe, but fundamentally so. Mountains, rivers, and your own self are all just the same. Why should they be separate and constitute two worlds? Even if you are well versed in Zen koans and know how to deal with them, if you stop there, everything is spoiled. See, if you know how to answer, you know, you can learn how to answer koans as like a system. You can figure out the koans, but that defeats the purpose. What's really important is to be in not knowing, be in wuxing, be in wuxing. If you do not stop, the whole world will be dissolved. But you know, he says, if you stop there, everything will be spoiled. If you get stuck on the system of answering koans and you don't go into wuxing. If you do not stop, the whole world will be dissolved and not a particle of it left behind. See, the whole world will be your body. See? Now tell me, what does it mean to be well-versed in Zen koans? See the following. Umon held out his staff and said to the assembled monks, "The staff has transformed itself into a dragon and swallowed up the river, the universe. Where are the mountains, the rivers, and the great world?" Setcho's verse, "The staff has swallowed up the universe. Don't say peach blossoms float on the water. The fish that gets its tail singed may fail to grasp the mist and clouds. The ones that lie with gills exposed need not lose heart." See, I think so many people are like that. It's like fish, you know, fish on land breathing with their gills. It's like trying to breathe. It's so hard, right? Need not lose heart. Don't lose heart. "My verse is done, but do you really hear me? Only be carefree. Stand unwavering. Why so bewildered? 72 blows are not enough. I want to give you 150.